Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is a returning guest who has now written a book, and I wanted to have him on the podcast to share his new book. Welcome to the podcast, Jacob Guy.
Thank you so much, Richard. I'm so excited to be here for the sequel. We got part two, I guess.
I like that. Jacob was on episode 613. Terrific episode, shared his story as a gay Latter-day Saint, active in the church, navigating his sexual orientation, and just did a terrific job on this podcast. Jacob, you're in your 20s. Tell our listeners how old you are and a little bit your station in life, where you've been going to school. I think you work now. How old you are, where you serve your mission, anything you want to give as kind of background.
Yeah. So I was born in Utah. When I was young, we moved to Florida and Texas, but I mean, ultimately came back to Utah. I graduated from Clearfield High in 2018. So I'm 23 years old. I went on a mission to Hermosillo, Mexico, and got back in 2020 with COVID. And then since then, I went to BYU for a year, and then I've been at Weber State. I'm actually in my senior year right now. I have one more semester left unless I drop out. I'm studying English with an emphasis in creative writing. And so my goal is to be a New York Times bestselling author and professional speaker. And I specifically want to focus on suicide awareness and prevention. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit about me.
I love that you want to do those two last things you mentioned, be a New York Times best author and focus on suicide prevention. Listeners, this podcast will talk about suicide. So trigger warning, if you're suicidal, please call, text, chat, *988. So we will talk about that. It's the a major theme of Jacob's book. Go ahead and just, I'm really glad you've, some people talk about their goals, but you're already working to achieve those goals during school. Self-published a book that's on Amazon. We'll link to Jacob's book in the show notes, but go ahead and introduce your book to our listeners.
So the book is a young adult dystopia. So it's in the same kind of genre as Hunger Games or Maze Runner. But here's kind of the premise. Are you ready for it? We'll get crisscross applesauce for the scoops. Basically, it's about a futuristic society where technology has advanced to the point where people no longer die from natural causes. And so as a result, the government has instituted the age of volition. Basically, it's a law requiring that everyone lives until they're 75 years old. Once someone turns 75, they can choose whether or not they want to keep living. And so the book is about a gay teenager who successfully commits suicide. And so he takes his life, but then the government uses technology to bring him back. And so then since he takes a life before the age of volition, he's considered a criminal and he gets sent to prison. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the general premise of the book.
Okay. So that's a concept I've never thought before. And writers have these creative minds to think about things that we've never thought before. And I've read some of your reviews on Amazon, Jacob, and they're all like, one person said, I want to give it 2 5 stars. So I think it's a book that once people start reading, it's just like pulls them in. It's a real page turner, really wonderfully written book. Go ahead and keep talking about the book. You could talk about why you decided to write this. These are two tender subjects, people that are suicidal, even those that have died by suicide, being gay and being a teenager. So you could talk a little bit about why you wrote it. You could also talk about what you hope it accomplishes.
Yeah. Let's get into it. I feel like this book has been such a journey. It's crazy looking back at everything that's happened since I started writing this book and as I've been writing this book. I came up with the idea at the end of 2021. Basically, in 2021, I had been working for a seminary teacher for about a year, and I ended up getting let go. I was getting tested for cancer. I had been dating this girl for 6 months, and then we ended up breaking up. And then I came out as gay, and there were just all these different factors that all happened kind of at the same time. There was like this 3-week period where everything had kind of compounded, and it just totally knocked me down. And I remember I was in this spot where I was feeling suicidal, and I was wondering if it would be better if I were to just disappear, if I wasn't there anymore. And I feel like a really big reason for that was coming out as gay. I've always grown up in the church. The church has always meant everything to me. I remember before I turned 12 and got the priesthood, I set a goal to read the Book of Mormon. So I read the Book of Mormon cover to cover before I turned 12, just because I wanted to have that connection with God before getting the priesthood. And I remember in high school, every Tuesday, I would go to the temple before school started. And I was part of the seminary council, and I love seminary, and I always participated in the church. It was something that I held very, very near and very dear to my heart. And so I feel like with coming out as gay, I was in this weird spot where like I knew that the church meant everything to me and I loved everything about the church. And I also had these feelings that I didn't understand and I didn't know what to do with. And so there was this conflict, there was this cognitive dissonance of these two things that I felt like I loved and that I cared about, but they didn't really associate very well together. And so I was in this spot where I was feeling suicidal. I was having suicidal thoughts. And after getting let go from seminary, I needed to find another job, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I ended up applying for UPS and just working as a temporary delivery driver during their busy season. So I got hired on, and I was delivering packages. And I remember there was one day where I dropped a package on a porch, and I was just kind of standing there, and I had this thought of what if suicide was illegal? Almost like this question of what if suicide wasn't just a moral issue, but a legal one? And it just kind of started building from there. And I started building this story about a character who does kill himself, but then gets brought back to life and has to suffer the consequences because of it. And so, yeah, the story just kind of started building from there. I remember that night after I had that idea, I went home and I started looking at some things. I've always loved writing, and I've always had little like side projects of writing, just little things that I've worked on. And so I started pulling some numbers, and I looked at some things that I had written. And basically from the time I had gotten back from my mission to this point, it had been about a year and a half. And between all of the writing that I had done, I had written about 70,000 words. And so I decided to look it up. And most young adult books are between 80,000 and 100,000. And I realized that I had written pretty casually. Like there wasn't really structure. There was routine. Sometimes I'd write for a couple hours a day. Sometimes I'd go a month without writing. It was very, very passive, I guess, very casual. And so I realized if I were to sit down and write a book, I feel like I really could. And so that was my goal. 2021, after everything had kind of fallen apart, I had this idea. And so I said, okay, that's going to be my goal for 2022. I'm going to write a book. So 2022 started. And basically, I took 2022 to finish the first draft. And so I got it all written out in 2022. And then last year, my goal was originally to get it traditionally published. And so last year, I went through a couple of different drafts. I ended up going through 11 different drafts in total. And I worked to get it traditionally published. So I contacted a bunch of different publishers and agents to see about getting it published, but that never went anywhere. And so I ended up deciding to self-publish. So at the end of last year, I started going through all that steps. And then, yeah, I ended up releasing it a couple weeks ago. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about it and kind of why I wrote it and how we're here. But it's crazy. It has been a journey.
Respect for writing a book. I don't know you well enough to know, you know, what thoughts come into your mind, but you know, when young people start something that they've never done before, there's sometimes voices around them that say, or you say them to yourself, you know, you can't do this. Who are you to think you can write a book? Is anything you write unique? And how did you just stay positive? This might help other authors. How did you just stay positive that you could actually do this?
I guess first off, it's important to note that there was a ton of self-doubt, and there's still self-doubt. I don't know if that ever goes away completely. But I guess a big thing for me is I felt so passionate about this book that I almost felt like I would be doing a disservice if I didn't get it out, if that makes sense. I remember in January of 2022, so I'd been working on the book for about a month. And I remember there was one night where I hadn't written it all that day. And I was very, very determined with this goal. And so I remember I hadn't written it all that day. I think it was 11 o'clock at night. And so I sat down at my desk and I started writing so I could hit my word count goal. And so I finished writing. And I remember lying in bed after that and just staring at the ceiling and thinking, like, I will not stop until this happens. I will give it everything that I can. And I also felt like, kind of like I mentioned earlier, like I would be doing a disservice if I didn't get this book out there. I feel like there are people who need it, and I feel like it would do a lot of good. And so I guess just that, that passion, that fire, and that zeal kind of kept me going throughout all of it.
How did you handle just going to publishers? And then I sense none of them gave you the green light and said, I'll publish this book. Did that cause you to say, well, if all these seasoned publishers who kind of know what's going to work or not all give me the thumbs down, why am I doing this? I don't want to put thoughts in your head that aren't there. But no, admire you just getting this book done with some headwinds along the way.
Yeah, I don't know. Einstein said that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I don't know if I'm determined or if I'm crazy, but I guess take that as you will. But yeah, so I tried traditionally publishing spring of last year. And so long story, but basically I contacted different agents and different publishers. I actually had one agent who was interested. And so we worked together. I sent her the first five chapters and she said, "This is really, really good. I feel like this could go somewhere. Will you send me the full manuscript?" So I sent her the full manuscript and then she ended up turning it away after that. But that was almost like a boost of confidence, I guess, because she had worked with several New York Times bestselling authors in the past. And so just the fact that there was any kind of interest there was kind of a boost. But then, yeah, after her, I ended up getting rejected over and over again. I think I was rejected 84 times before I ended up self-publishing. But
Are you glad you went through that process before you ended up self-publishing?
I am, yeah. I feel like that pressure and that rejection just helped me realize how passionate I am about my book and just helped me reinforce the desire that I have for people to read it, I guess. Like this idea of like you have a diamond and it needs pressure to get it to its best possible. I don't know, to make it worth the most, I guess. I feel like that's happened with this book. Like from all this pressure and all this rejection, like it's been whittled down to something that I really am proud of and I really am happy with.
Respect for navigating all the headwinds to get this book written and self-published. Talk about who you hope reads it.
Oh, this is such a good question. I guess I remember in 2021, before I came out, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do because I had been teaching seminary, right? Like the church meant everything to me. I had this girlfriend we've been dating for 6 months, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I remember, just feeling suicidal and just feeling like it would be better off if I wasn't here anymore. And I guess my hope is that people who are maybe in that same position will find this book and will find different principles or different gems for them to keep moving forward. I just hope that people who are struggling with their sexuality, who feel like maybe it would be better to be dead than to be gay, can find this book and that it will help them to navigate their situation a little bit better, or at least feel peace and acceptance with where they're at.
There's a real need for this content. And I love the way you know, this isn't just theoretical for you, Jacob. This is obviously part of your story. And I admire you being open with suicidal ideation, wondering if everything better off and reconciling your love of the church and your sexual orientation and coming out of a relationship with a girl that didn't work. And my experience talking with a lot of LGBTQ LDS youth is that's sometimes the most difficult time is just sort of like where you were. Chester, the character in the book, does die by suicide, and that's obviously something you're inviting readers not to do, and you didn't do that. So some might say, well, wouldn't it be better to have written a book where the character doesn't die and he's able to talk like you are about the benefits of staying? But this is a different take. Talk, I don't want to have you give away the whole plot of the book, but obviously you've really thought this through. Because you want people to live. Do you want to address that question?
So I guess without going too deep into the book or giving away too much,
Good.
So here's kind of like the scoops. So in the book, basically, life is considered the first priority of the society. Basically, like we have the Pledge of Allegiance, they have the Common Pledge, and it's basically this promise that they make every day, that they'll honor the sanctity of life. And so as a result, because of that, there's a law that everyone has to get married when they turn 18 years old. And having kids isn't like mandated by the government, but is heavily, heavily encouraged. So everyone has to get married to someone from the opposite sex. And so basically, the character's about to turn 18. And so that's ultimately what leads him to commit suicide, as he feels like, I don't know if I can follow through with this. And so he takes his life. And then without going into too many details, I guess basically the character goes through this journey where he realizes that like who he is okay. And he just comes to this place of peace and acceptance of where he's at. That was something that I really, really wanted to emphasize with this book, I guess, and really make clear is that like the system doesn't necessarily change. Like it's not like the character isn't like these laws are stupid and like society needs to change the way that everything is. And he's also not saying like I'm terrible and I should be dead, but he comes to like this balance where almost like saying, this is the way things are. This is the way I feel. And you know what, maybe that's okay. Maybe I can be all right with those two things. And so, I think there's definitely pros and cons to writing about a character who takes his life, but I think that ultimately makes it more powerful because we see this journey where he takes us along from where he starts to where he ends, and we can kind of see the growth through that. So I think there's a lot of encouragement by the end, if that makes sense.
It does. It's a very unique angle. Obviously, we don't have stories from the other side of those that have died by suicide and what they'd say now. And so you've created a way to do that in the book. You know, this is your creative mind, Jacob. And I love that it's not like everything's reconciled. I'm putting words a little bit in what you said, but your character learns to sort of live with the paradoxes of his situation and find peace in that. And I sense he's not ongoing suicidal, that he is in a good spot and he's not brushing up against constant suicidal attempts, that he's found a place to be at peace.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. I think that helps younger people stay. And I think that's a unique perspective, very creative way to bring a story. Tell us more about the book. What else, you know, would you just like listeners to know about the book?
Oh, good question. Let's see.
Is it a series or is it a one-off? I don't know if you want to talk about future books or.
Oh yeah, great question. So the goal is actually for this book to be the first in a trilogy. And so after this one, there should be two more. So I started writing the second book. I'm not super far along in it, but yeah, ultimately that's the goal, is that this is book one of three.
That's great. You know, I'm shifting gears a little bit about your own story, and it's in episode 613, listeners. But one of the things that the first time I became aware of you was a Facebook post where you talked about, I'm locked out of the house, the happiness straight house where everybody could be married to somebody of the opposite sex. And I'm locked out. I'm on the porch. It's raining. I can see all the beauty in there. I want to be a part of that, but I don't have a key to get in the house. I don't know how to make this work. And I think that's the first time it was just a really thoughtful visual imagery for me, somebody who's in the straight house and, you know, is in there for people that aren't, and just it helped me understand things really in a thoughtful, creative way. I don't know if you want to retell that analogy or just talk about, you know, what it's like to be a gay Latter-day Saint for people that haven't heard your stories and some of the challenges of that road and how you're living with the paradoxes. Anything you want to say about your own story?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a really, really interesting spot to be in. Kind of like we talked about at the beginning of last year, I had written up just a few thoughts about what it's like being LDS and gay. And I ended up posting it, which is how Richard and I met. Basically it's just this idea of, it almost feels like the plan of happiness is like this house where you have to get married in order to enter that house. Sometimes it feels like I'm standing on that porch and I want to enter, but I don't have a key to get in there. I feel like I've, like in high school, I dated girls. And like I said, when I got back from my mission, I continued dating. There was a girl that I almost got married to. We had been dating for 6 months and we started talking about marriage. And I feel like sometimes it feels like I'm standing on that porch and I want to go in there and I want to enter, but I don't know how to. And I'm ultimately just trying to make God proud, but I don't know the best way to do that. There's another story that I heard a little bit ago. Basically, it's about this man who finds this boulder and God commands him to push it. And so he starts pushing it and it doesn't go anywhere. And so he goes home. And the next day, God asks him to push it again. And so the next day the man goes out and he pushes the boulder. And again, the boulder doesn't move at all. This pattern ends up repeating for several weeks. And after those few weeks, the man ends up collapsing to the ground and says, God, why are you asking me to do this? I've been pushing this after weeks and the boulder hasn't moved an inch. This is ridiculous. And God says, I never asked you to move the boulder. I asked you to push it. Right? The goal wasn't to move the boulder. The goal is about changing you. The boulder's still here, but look at how much you've changed. You're so much stronger. You're so much better. That was ultimately the goal in the end. It wasn't about moving this boulder. It was about changing you. And I guess for me, that's the perspective that I've tried to take as a gay Latter-day Saint, that there's this boulder in my life. And I feel like in many different ways, it's like I've tried to remove this boulder and I've tried to figure out a way to just eradicate it from my life. But I've pushed and I've pushed and I've pushed and it really hasn't ever gone anywhere. And so what I'm trying to do now is just come to a point of acceptance and to recognize that even if the boulder hasn't moved, I've become so much better because of it. I feel like I've become more compassionate, more understanding, more bold, more brave, more confident, more like my savior. And I guess that's my focus now, is instead of how can I move this boulder, it's how can I continue to get stronger and to allow the savior to change me. And yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
You have the gift of visual imagery, Jacob, to bring, it's one of your gifts.
Thank you.
And I assume if I read your book, I'd be filled with visual imagery. Talk about the book name. How did you come up with the book name? Is it targeted for young adults or is it targeted for all ages?
I would love for this book to reach young adult audiences, but I think pretty much anyone would enjoy it and relate to it. I've tried to write it in a way that it's very approachable. So regardless of whether you're an avid reader, whether you read like one book a decade, I hope that it's engageable and that it's easy to understand and to work with. And then as far as the title, the Scorpion Unit, basically what happens is Chester takes his life. The government brings him back. And so now he's a criminal and he goes to prison. And so while he's in prison, he hides the fact that he's gay and his life is the only life he's taken. But as prison progresses, he realizes that he isn't the only one telling lies and hiding secrets. And it ends up turning into the Scorpion Unit. So without going into too many details, that's kind of what happens.
That's great. here's some questions that come in my mind just because I think you're real thoughtful. Young man, what... people that have become aware of your story, you're a gay Latter-day Saint. What are some things, you know, people sometimes naturally want to give you advice or even just say the right thing. Coach us on some of the things people should say and some of the things that aren't as helpful.
Good question. I don't know. I feel like for me, the biggest thing that I appreciate is just when people show that they care and just show that they acknowledge where I'm at. I guess a story to illustrate this point. I remember on New Year's Eve in 2022, I went over to my parents' house. So it was me and my mom and dad. And then all of my siblings were gone. They were just like with friends. My one sister was with her boyfriend. My other siblings had moved out basically. So it was just me and my parents. I remember my mom was working in the primary and she was planning on doing like these, she was planning on giving out like these little candies for the kids. And so she asked me if I would help her put them together. And so I remember me and my mom were sitting at the kitchen table, putting it together. And we were just talking and somehow we had started talking about dating and she knows where I'm at with being a member of the church and also being gay and trying to figure out all of that. And just as we were putting it together, I remember my mom said, Jacob, I wish that you had someone to be here with you tonight. And I don't know. I just remember she said that and just that acknowledgement of where I was at, like trying to figure out, being a member of the church and dating and just that whole struggle. Just the fact that she said, I wish that you had someone to be here with you tonight and you could be happy with them. I just remember feeling so seen and so understood and acknowledged and loved. And obviously that wasn't any big thing, but it helped me feel like no matter what choice I made moving forward, ultimately, my mom wanted me to be happy and to know that she cared about me. And I feel like that spoke volumes for me. And so I think, I don't know if that helps, but that was the first thing that came to mind, just this idea of really seeing people where they're at and then trying to understand what's best for them. And maybe what we think is best for them is different from what they actually need.
That's a great one. Other thoughts that come to your mind, things that are helpful, things that aren't as helpful?
I think too is just asking questions and being willing to try to understand where someone is at instead of trying to interpret where someone is at, if that makes sense. Like I have this friend in my ward and she's awesome. And so she will ask questions all the time. Probably once a week, she'll text me and she'll be like, hey, I just want to understand like gay people in the church better. So like, how would you feel if you were in this situation? Or like, if I were in a conversation and I were to say this, how would that make you feel? And I just feel like she genuinely wants to see where people are at. And so I think that's a big thing, is coming from a place of curiosity instead of judgment, just genuinely trying to see, what is this experience like for you? How can I understand it better? And what can I do to make it better for you moving forward?
Boy, that's a great one. How do you handle your future? People probably want to know, are you going to marry a woman? Are you marry a guy? Are you going to be single? There's kind of this, you may feel it. People may directly ask you those questions, or you may just feel people kind of wondering that about you. And you may wonder that about you. How do you sort of navigate your future?
That is a very great question. I feel like I don't know. I feel like it really just depends on the day. I feel like I go back and forth all the time about what will ultimately be best for me and what I want to do. But I guess I had a thought a little bit ago, and this has been a guiding force for me. Back in 2020, I bought my first car. It's a Kia Forte that I named Fiona, so I could say it like Prince Charming and Shrek. And so Fiona has this feature called Lane Keeping Assist. Basically, what that means is when I'm driving, it'll sense the lanes of the road, and it'll like keep me in the center of the lane. So if I start like getting too close, let's say I'm driving on the freeway and I'm listening to music too loud and not paying attention. This is a hypothetical example, of course. Then the car will steer, basically like the car will turn the wheel so that I get back into the middle of the lane. And it's actually to the point where if I'm going around like a turn and I'm going above 40 miles per hour, I can take my hands off the wheel and the car will like start to turn. The car will turn the steering wheel. And that goes on for a couple seconds, but then if I keep my hands off the wheel, I have to put my hands back on or the feature will turn off. And I guess for me, that's almost like the approach I'm trying to take with Revelation and with moving forward. I feel like, as I've tried to navigate everything, I've come to the conclusion that I really am in the driver's seat of my life. I think if God wanted thoughtless puppets, he could have them. But ultimately, he gave us agency. And I think associated with the gift of agency is the expectation that we'll actually use it. And so for me, what I try doing is I feel like my hands are on the wheel and I'm going to try steering to what I think is going to be best. And if I start getting too close to a line, if I start going somewhere where I shouldn't, then I trust that God is going to beep at me. He's going to start turning the wheel and he's going to help me get back on track. So I feel like right now at my life, my responsibility is to listen and to not get frustrated when he starts turning the wheel. But then my job is to move forward and to not be impulsive, I guess, not to do things on a whim or to do things without researching them and to think about them. But my responsibility is to move forward with the revelation that I have received and with the knowledge that I've gotten from Heavenly Father, and to just really trust that and rely on that, and to really believe that if I start going close to a lane, then Heavenly Father is going to help me to course correct. But I guess for me, I've really come to the conclusion that action precedes answers. If I want answers from Heavenly Father, then it's up to me to start acting and to find a way to get those answers. And so for the future, I have no idea what it looks like. But I feel like I trust that Heavenly Father is going to help me to get to where I need to go. And if I start getting too close to a lane, then he's going to turn that wheel. And I just, my responsibility then is to not get frustrated when that happens.
Terrific answer. Just a terrific answer. It reminds me of your spiritual maturity. Listeners, you know, I've talked about this in some of my solo podcasts that, you know, if you're like Jacob Guy, or if you're, you know, kind of post-mission or even pre-mission, I think my best advice to you is to become your personal best. And part of that is getting on with your school. If you can serve a mission, having a great relationship with God, the ability to understand and access personal revelation, and just be your personal best as you come up to these potential forks in the road. What is your life path going to be if you're a gay, lesbian, Latter-day Saint? And to make those with I like you said, not impulsive. That's your language. And to continue to use the visual metaphor you had of guiding lanes and just know that God has a plan for you. But sometimes I see people making rash decisions or decisions out of vulnerability or decisions not out of the personal best or out of anger or out of pain. So, you know, I think you're a really good example. And I know you're not perfect. None of us are perfect. Of just somebody who's been very intentional, very thoughtful, you know, in a really good spot. I sense emotionally with your career, to just know that you'll know what steps to take at the right time. And the other thought that came to my mind, listeners, instead of, okay, so let's say I'm Jacob's friend and his ward. I could be spending all this emotional capital around Jacob thinking, what road is he ultimately going to take? And kind of wondering on the back row where Jacob is going to end up. And that's, I think a better thing is to do what your friend did, is sort of, instead of spending my time thinking about that for Jacob, do what your friend did, you know, talk to you, be curious, ask questions, not necessarily like, tell me exactly how your future is going to work out, but be curious about where you are today and what can I can help you today and walk with you today without an agenda. And just trust you and your relationship with God that you know the best way to go forward. And my personal revelation doesn't give me the ability to dictate your personal revelation, but I can walk with you and I can support you and I can be curious. So just some nuggets of advice to fellow allies or family friends as we're walking with gay Latter-day Saints as they make their way forward. And maybe some soft advice to gay Latter-day Saints that I think is consistent with what Jacob is doing, is intentional and thoughtful and personal revelation guided. Anything I've said that you're not okay with or any thoughts on that?
No, I think that's awesome, Richard. I completely agree.
Can I ask you, here's a question that goes back to, you got let go from seminary.
Mm-hmm.
You said that earlier, and I just want to, you know, people get let go from church employment at times. It's the church is an employer, so good people with Temple Recommends get let go from church jobs. How did you kind of navigate that? Because in some ways it feels like a rejection from the church. And, you know, some people may just feel like, wait a second, you know, I just like didn't get into BYU, so I feel rejected from the church that I believe in. Any principles for those that have sort of felt some of that pain on how to navigate that?
Oh, good question, Richard. I don't know. That was, for me, that was a really, really interesting thing. I guess teaching seminary was actually my dream job. Ever since I was little, I always wanted to be a seminary teacher. Like I remember when I was in eighth grade, we did like a career fair kind of thing where you had to pick a job and then, like spend a day as if you were working that job. And I remember I picked seminary teacher for that job, and that kind of stayed consistent as I grew up. And so, yeah, when I got let go, it was definitely difficult. And I definitely felt some of that like rejection too, like some of that, I don't know, some of those difficult or unexpected feelings. And I guess for me, I remember the day that I found out I was going to be let go. I was feeling pretty upset and feeling pretty frustrated. And I just remember I threw on my running clothes and I went to the trail behind my house and I just went for a run. And I remember on that run, I just had the thought, there was a quote from Elder Bednar, and basically interpreting this quote to myself, I just had the thought that I need to allow this to make me better instead of making me bitter. And so that was something that I just tried to hold on to, that like this ultimately wasn't like a defining characteristic of my spirituality, or this wasn't going to like totally take away from my testimony. But ultimately in the end, if I allowed it to be, this could be something to help me become better. Like back to that boulder analogy, just trying to trust that everything that Heavenly Father does is for our benefit. And so if we continue pushing on the boulder, we continue giving our best, then ultimately in the end, it is going to help us to become stronger, become better.
It's a great answer. Instead of causing me to become bitter, it becomes better. And it's not an indication of my spiritual identity or worth. I'm paraphrasing that second part, but that's just really powerful. Jacob, you know, we do a lot of podcasts. You're really mature, thoughtful, bright, capable young man. and you've got a great life ahead of you, and all these years of internalized homophobia that sometimes maybe older people that have been on the podcast, I sense decades of sort of working through this, you younger people seem, I don't know if this is true or not, it's just anecdotal, if that's the right verb.
just, it's okay, we meant what you knew.
You know, it gives me hope for the future, and it's respect, and it models for younger people that are just, you know, in their teens sort of figuring this out, and hear people like you that are at peace with their sexual orientation and can be open about it if that's the right thing for them, and be a Latter-day Saint and sort of live with the paradox of that at times. And but you're really, really thoughtful and mature. There's a quote from Brené Brown I read a lot, that you are doing a great job of living. Fitting in is assessing a situation to becoming someone you need to be in order to be accepted. Belonging doesn't require us to change who we are. It requires us to be who we are. And Jacob, who you are is awesome. And you have, you know, you're multidimensional. Yeah, being gay is part of your identity. But you have all these gifts. You're incredibly creative. And you have the ability to put words to visual imagery that creates real meaning for people. And I think that's one of your spiritual gifts. And I think it allows you to teach and have people remember what you teach. And I love that you're a writer, and I love that you want to be a New York Times bestselling author. And I think if we did podcasts with all those New York Times bestselling authors, they talk about the first book they wrote and the worry that they had and wondering, can I do this? And there are probably a lot of people that said, you can't do this. This isn't your deal, and you'll never measure up. And so, and they did what you want to become. So I just like to put, sort of figuratively put my hands on your back and people like you and say, go for it. My job is just to give you all the support I can give as you make your way forward and walk with you and support you. And but you're a remarkable man and doing good things. And you could come on the podcast every 5 years, 10 years. And I think you'd be full of just beautiful life stories. And you're also a healer because of your work. This book heals people and it gives hope. And because you're open about your sexual orientation and vulnerable, and with the analogies you shared in your own life experience, it causes people to be curious so they can do better and better understand. Listeners, we'll link to in the show notes to Jacob's book. It's at Amazon. It's called The Scorpion Unit. You can just Google Jacob Guy at Amazon if you don't want to go to the show link. We'll also link to episode 613 if you want to hear his full story. It's a terrific podcast. Anything else you'd like to share with listeners in closing, Jacob Guy?
Yeah, I guess just one final thought. As we've been talking, you mentioned Brené Brown, and I love Brené Brown. She has another quote that I really, really like, that I've really tried to implement in my life. She said, "It's hard to hate someone from up close." And I think I would build on that. And I would add that it's also hard to love someone from far away. And I think, I don't know. I hope that I can become more Christ-like in that way. And I hope we all can, right? I think what Brené Brown says is completely correct, that it is hard to hate someone from up close. I feel like the more that we come to understand someone, and the more that we come to learn about someone, the more that we come to love them. And I think that the opposite is true as well. If we want to love someone, it's hard to love them from an arm's length away. And so as we take that time to understand their story and get to know them and their triumphs and their shortcomings and everything that they've gone through, then I think we come to see them for the hero that they really are. And on the subject of heroes, thank you for being one of mine, Richard. You're so good at supporting and uplifting other people, and you really are a force for good in this world. So thank you for being a light in my life and for all of the good that you've put out before. I appreciate it, and I'm so grateful for it.
Thank you, Jacob. Great to have you on the podcast. And listeners, back to one thing I didn't mention, I mentioned in other podcasts, is, you know, as people make their way forward on these different paths that we've talked about, I've tried not to make somebody the hero one day and the villain next day because of the path they take. Let's just love everybody as they receive personal revelation. And we're called to be gatherers, not sifters. Let's leave judgment at our Savior and his perfect understanding of everybody's unique situation. That isn't selling out doctrine. That, to me, is just honoring doctrine of our church and of Christ's teaching, and to love people as they make their path forward. And and not to have our relationship with other people conditional on them choosing a certain path. I just think that part of the way to heal the world and to keep us together is the same human family. So, Jacob Guy, you have a great life ahead of you. Listeners, act on your impressions and read this book, share it with others, check out Jacob's earlier episode, be curious like Jacob's friends. And this is Jacob Guy and Richard Osler signing off another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.